ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमत्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुरुपुरीं माथुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितकृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगण रघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। महाभारत अरण्यक पर्व, major section of Mahabharata, is devoted to the visit of the Pandavas to so many holy places of pilgrimage, and prior to that an extensive description of the places of pilgrimage. What happened, they're in the forest. Arjuna went to the Himalayas to get the heavenly weapons, or higher level weapons, for the almost certain that there's going to be some fight at the, if they get through this 12 plus 1 years, then there's going to be a big fight. And it was known that Duryodhana and company were fond of, they wanted to fight. They were looking for a fight. What does that say in Bhagavad Gita? Fond of fighting. No, yuyutsava means the yudha, priya, chikirshava. Fond of fighting. Unnecessarily for Kshatriyas in general are fond of fighting, but they should not unnecessarily fight. It's supposed to be on the basis of dharma. So Arjuna had gone off to the heavenly planets. So the remaining Pandavas, they're going to go on Tirtha Yatra, visiting holy place. They got time. What are you going to do? You have. So they decided to go. Pulastya and Dhomya were two great sages who were present with them at the time. They're supposed to know everything. You're supposed to be able to ask such people, and they should be ready to reply. Of course, it may be if you have a few sages around, then one will say, well, for that branch of knowledge, you better refer to him. He knows it better than me. But they should, Srila Prabhupada said, knowledge means to know something of everything and everything of something. In other words, a jack of all trades and a master of at least one. That's an English saying. altered a little bit. You should know something about everything and everything about something. Expert in one line and with general knowledge about so many things. So Pulasya and Dhaumya, who were with them in the forest, gave them an extensive description of the principal holy places of Bharatavarsha, where they're situated, their histories, how they became known as holy places, what's the specialty. It's not this that someone goes and says, well, this is a holy place. But there's something connected. The Mahatmya is the specific characteristics. What happened there? Or if bank of the Ganga means Ganga's there, that's all that's needed. But then along the bank of the Ganga, there are so many places which have their own special qualities and stories, and just like Varanasi, naturally I've been talking about Varanasi a lot. What's special is dear to Lord Shiva. And then so many things happen there also, such as getting the head of Brahma removed from his hand. That's Kapala Mochana. That's a story that once Lord Shiva cut off one of Brahma's five at the time heads, and it stuck to his hand, and he got it delivered in Varanasi. So things happen there also. And then afterwards, so many great personalities visited there. Shankara's visit there is very famous. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited. Presumably Ramanuja also visited there. And Madhva, did he? Not sure. Don't remember it being described. He went up the west side, all up the west side. Up to Badrikashram and beyond. Vedanta Deshika went there, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went there, Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur went there, our own Prabhupada went there. So that all the glories of a holy place go on increasing in course of time. Tulsidas, he composed his Ramcharit Manas there. And so many things, right? So many things. So the glories go on increasing. But what they were at that time was described, and then all the things, the benefits you get from going there, all the things you should do when you go there, and the benefits you get from doing the things you should do, you should bathe, you should fast, that's standard, and shave your head for men. And then you have to visit this temple first and then that temple first and do parikrama so many times. So all those things are described. So Pulastya, where do you begin? Where would you begin? You have to begin somewhere. So he began by describing Pushkar. That's connected with Lord Brahma. So from the time of creation. So that's described as Adi Tirtha, the beginning of all, the first of all Tirthas. And still the only major Tirtha of Brahma in the whole of India. Although there are temples of him outside India, especially in Thailand, he's one of the popular gods. Prabhum, as he's called. Prat means Sri, and Bhum is the upper branch in Thai of Brahma. And you have Prakisana, who's that? Prakisana means Sri Krishna. Pa'in is a tonal. Pa'in means Sri Indra, and so on. And little bits and pieces of Thai, which I remember, probably pronouncing it all wrong, but anyway. You don't know. So it doesn't make any difference to you. So then he heads in his Pulastra, in his description, heads out toward Mahakal, Ujjain, nowadays it's called Ujjaini, Avantika, I already spoke about that, with describing the things on the way, then a bit south down to Narmada, then northwest again up to Arbud, Mount Abu, as it's now called, and up to Dwaraka. And then to Pakistan. It wasn't known as Pakistan at the time. It is part of Bharatavarsha. But now it's considered Pakistan. The confluence of the Sindhu with the Sindhu. The Sindhu River with the ocean. Then to Kurukshetra, which of course was a holy place, is known as a holy place long before the battle of Kurukshetra took there. Dharmakshetra, first words of Bhagavad Gita. It's known as a place of, specifically as a place for performing yajñas. That was Kuru. King Kuru took that benediction, that place would be known for its piety. Then Pulastya takes the Pandavas up to the sources of the Ganga and Yamuna, and then goes down through, follows the Ganga, and then the area in the the catchment area of the Ganga, the Gangetic Plain, as it's known, and it takes us to the Sarayu River, famous in connection with Lord Rama. Then to Varanasi Gaya, which is not on the Ganga, but close enough, so it's all part of that geographical area. And then down to Ganga Sagar, and then south, and the long way south. His description doesn't describe so many places as he starts to move south. And one of the places he describes is Sri Parvat, on the bank of the Kaveri River, on which I was mentioning mountains yesterday, but I didn't mention about this one. There's on the bank of the Kaveri, and there is Sri Silam, which is not on the bank of the Kaveri, but it's on the river. Sri Silam, which is a holy place connected with Lord Shiva, one of the Jyotirlingas. And it's also a Shakti Pita. I plan to speak on the places connected with Lord Shiva and with Shakti a little later in their series. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also visited there, Sri Silam, on his journey in South India. Sorry, it's on the Krishna River, not the Kaveri. Krishna River. And then further south is Kaveri. And then he takes the Pandavas in his description down to Kanya Tirtha, which presumably is Kanyakumari, and then up along the west to gradually reaching Gokarna, and then way up north again up to Chitrakoot, and makes his last stop Prayag. So it's from, I'll do it from my side, because it's a bit difficult for me to think back to front. So he goes, something like that. Then Domya gives a description, giving many of the same tirthas, but he does them He first enumerates the Tirthas in the east, then in the south, then in the west and the north. So the Pandavas got good knowledge about all these places, and they set up, they set out from the land of the Kurus, where they were domiciled, now out in the forests, and they traveled east through the Gangetic plain, the catchment area of the Ganges, and came down to Ganga Sagar. And many Brahmins and Rishis, they came, accompanied them, because they thought, well, that's good, we can go too, why not? We'll go along with them and visit all these Tirthas. And the Kshatriyas are there to protect us. Not generally that Brahmins and Rishis would need protection, but there may be so many wild animals and wild people along the way. So they naturally they bathed at Ganga Sagar. And bathing, it means a lot of baths in a lot of places. Everywhere. Anyway, people take baths daily, but especially took the opportunity to bathe in many holy rivers and lakes and ponds in the case, and the sea. Then going along the coastline, that's the standard way, down to what is now Orisha, and then down the eastern side, crossing the Narmada, and into the south. But it doesn't say how far south they go. And the next stop is Shuparaka, the next one mentioned, which is close to the mouth of the Narmada in the west. So they, unless something's missing from the description, they reach to the Narmada and then went west, following the course of the Narmada. Then up north to Saurashtra, Prabhas Somnath. There they met the Vrishnis, their great friends, because they're great friends of Krishna. So Krishna appeared in the dynasty of the Vrishnis, Yadus. And from there, they went back to central India along the path of the Payoshni River, the Narmada, and then north up to the Yamuna. And all along there's description of so many mountains, rivers, and tirthas. Because it's a Tirtha Yatra. It's not a tourism taking snaps, but they're going for purification. Then they come to Gangadwara, where they're also known as Haridwara, and then close to that is, it means where the Ganga comes out of the mountains. Then Kankal, near to Haridwara, which is the place of Daksha's sacrifice. And then they go up to the mountains to meet Arjuna, who's coming back. He should be getting time for him to come back from the Swargaloka, the heavenly world. Then they go up, and the scenery and is described. It's much more difficult, gets more and more difficult as it gets more and more steep, with the forests and the mountain paths. They're not really paths, but in many places. In those times, unless one had a competent guide, it would be very easy to get lost in the mountains and jungles going up. Or to, if you take a wrong track, it could be extremely dangerous also. apart from the danger of lions and tigers and boars and bears and so on and so on. But it's very beautiful also. Going up in the Himalayas. Nowadays, people mostly go by bus, and it's a different feeling altogether to be squeezed inside a bus, making lots of noise, and then often they have the video going on also, which makes a lot more noise. But anyway, the people are happy to go up, and that last stretch when you go, the last stretch, the last stop before Badrinath is Jyotirmath, place of Shankaracharya. And then there's like a steep turn. Well, there's so many steep turns, and it gets really steep up to the last bit. So everyone's calling out Jai Badri Vishal as they're going along. That's not the top, because it goes up and up and up further. Madhvacharya went further up, but mostly people don't go further than Badrinath. You can see the Alakananda River comes down, flowing with great force, but it means coming down means there's further up to go. Later, the Pandavas, they went up this way. That's the Swagarohan Parava, the ascent to heaven that describes. They went up further beyond Badrinath. And along the way, they heard all so many stories. So typical of Mahabharata, they're in a holy place, and then they reach and then they ask about what's the story here. And then there's an elaborate story, just like the story of how Bhagirath brought the Ganga. And you got so deep in the story, you forget about the Pandavas and everything. And then after you've been through so much, and then again, oh yeah, okay, all right. Yeah, it's the Pandavas, right, okay, all right. Let's go on to the next place, like that. So we can understand that the Pandavas, although they were used to great opulence, when they became pilgrims, necessarily they became almost like sannyasis, like rishis. Even now, with all modern comforts and all endeavors to make things comfortable, just like if you go to Kumbh Mela, you can hire a Swiss tent, but that's about the most comfortable thing you can get. If you, pilgrimages are meant for us to, of course you could, if you book in advance, take a hotel in the town, but then why go on pilgrimage? The whole idea is to accept austerity. It's not just in the holy place, but on the way. It's not that one has, drinks 7-ups on the way, and then when you get to the holy place, you become very austere. But the whole idea is to be very austere. It should be done barefoot, walking. You're not supposed to go on a horse or any such thing. Although you can have a donkey, you join donkeys to carry the necessary stuff. But you don't want to carry too much stuff, because then you become, apart from the fact you want to keep things as simple as possible, then if you have too many animals, then you need people to look after the animals, you have to have food for the animals, and then if you have so many things, you're inviting robbers to come and attack you and possibly kill you and take everything. So it's really best to keep things as simple as possible. So it's almost like sannyas, or vanaprastha life at least. Just like the Pandavas went with Draupadi. So they weren't exactly like sannyasis, but it's a life of austerity, leaving the home behind, and just concentrating fully on punya and dharma, and in the case of the Pandavas, bhakti to Krishna. And in the family life, in the village where one is used to live, or the town, there's a certain sense of security. That sense of security is false, because nothing's stable or secure in this world. But there's certainly less security going to unknown places, in which at any point along the way one may get diseased, one may slip and fall and become injured, one may be beset by robbers, snakes, scorpions, no doctors. So you're really putting yourself at the mercy of the Lord, taking His shelter. Whatever you wish, if you wish that I die along the way, so be it. Not that one courts danger, but that possibility is there more. Even if in one's home, if one is bit by a scorpion, they'll know what to do. They'll call the local fakir or whatever and do whatever's required. This Sri Girdhari told me that they're just building their building there for the translation work, and in the neighboring village are tribal people. So they're engaging the tribal people, and one woman got bit by a scorpion. No one panicked. They just immediately, someone went in the jungle, brought back some herbs, did something, and she was out of work. She didn't come the next couple of days, and then she was back at work. And no one started screaming or yelling or running off to the hospital or any such thing. So like that. But then if you're on the Tirtha Yatra and you're in the middle of a jungle going through some path, you may not even be sure it's the right path. You need to take some guide. Well, the guide may be help you with all these things. That's also the... But on the whole, there's uncertainty, lot of discomfort, dangers. We don't think of that nowadays with going on pilgrimage. It's all, you have package tours, right? 5-day package tour, Varanasi, Ayodhya, Prayag. Everything's all arranged, so fly there, take a train, and then the taxi to meet you at the station, drive you, go to the hotel, food, everything arranged. You see the places and come back. But it was a different... It's become a bit like sightseeing. A bit like that. There was no such thing as sightseeing, and now that's being promoted, especially with this Statue of Unity. As you go and see, and you go up, and you look from a great... It's so high you can... I've seen from a distance, because our farm is near there. I've seen from a distance, but people, they go up, and there are all kinds of... There's a museum, and then... this and that they do, and it takes a whole day to go up, and you can look from a height all around and see. But that wasn't there. Certainly people would see this, it would be seeing the sights, and it's not in that mood. It's a completely different mood that one goes to submit oneself. It's not in a mood of enjoyment. It's in a mood of austerity, concentrating on the real need of life or the real goal of life. Of course, there are different levels of pilgrims also, because many go for completely materialistic reasons. But even if someone goes for materialistic reasons, there's a lot of austerity, and there may be So it should be some kind of realization that, especially if one is raised in the spiritual culture of India, where one hears, should hear again and again and again before people were watching TV with silly programs on them, they would hear again and again from Puranas and maybe Ramcharitmanas how everything in this world is temporary, we have no real connection with it. And then when you're out of home for days and days and you don't know anyone and it's different scenery to what you've ever seen before, the people speak different language all around you and their customs are different, and you start to realize, well, really, I really don't have anything to do with my home. Even if you go for a materialistic reason on a pilgrimage, then the very nature of it is, especially if one is raised in such a spiritual culture, that one will start to feel some detachment from this, my home, my house, in which you think is, that's the whole universe, and then you, that's the nature of Maya. And you become so attached to it, and your whole world revolves around it, and you're going among people, they never heard of the place you're from. They don't speak the language that you speak, and to them it means nothing whether you live or die. And you just realize how small I am and how insignificant the place I'm living in is. And anyway, I have to leave that. I can't stay forever. I have to die. So the very nature of it is to inspire a sense of detachment from all that is temporary, and it's supposed to and also there's so much austerity is there, so one should get some kind of realization that sense gratification, what's the point anyway, that life is full of so much difficulty. But generally we see pilgrims, then it's for all the austerities and difficulties, they're very happy, they're happy to do that. And it's not that everyone just goes in an air-conditioned bus here and there, but even if they do, when, for instance, they go walking around Govardhan, which is, it's not a major austerity, but it's 14 kilometers, which for most people it's pretty tiring because they're not used to doing that. And then if you do the whole parikrama of all of Brajamandala, our ISKCON devotees do it in 30 days or so in Kartik. Or there are others who do according to what was the Narayan Bhatta Goswami made the system, I think 48 days, Vallabh Sampradaya do. And they're mostly all well-to-do people who accept so many austerities to walk all around the area of Braj. So that, in particular, that's a bit different. I'll get back to that later. The difference between a tirtha and a dham, because it's not so much crossing over. It's not a place to cross over, but it's a place to enter into. So they realize, or you should be, by hearing regularly, you should realize that I've left that home, but that's not my real home. This is my real home. Gore na jaibo, bone probeshibo. Olila Rosh Era Tori, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings. I won't go back to my home. I'll enter into the forest of Vrindavan for the sake of that rasa, prem rasa. So that realization at various levels should start to take place, especially if the hearing is going on, which is very much part of the Vedic culture. Hearing. For very few, there may be hearing talks of Vedanta or Shaddarshans, Manushanam Sahasreshu Kastidyatiti Siddhaya. There's a few people may be interested in self-realization. But then there are other, everyone, they can hear the Puranas and the message gets there through telling so many stories that the message is given. Either directly or subtly, everything in this world is temporary and miserable, and we don't really belong here. We should try to come out of it. Even there are so many stories, there's that, what is that, Katha Sarit Saga, something like that. Thousands and thousands of stories in Sanskrit collected, and it's all about how someone in this life they did this, and then in the next life, how did they become a donkey in this life? Well, actually, in my previous life, I was a very high class king, and then I did something wrong, and da 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 da. And so many stories are there, which are mundane, but there are some messages there also. Giving the understanding that you get what you deserve. If we act sinfully, we get sinful results. And then now I'm a donkey or whatever, and then okay, so I have to do something to get purified, and then they do something to get purified, and they leave the body of a donkey, and so many things like that. You'll find. So really, it's this Varnashram culture, it's really meant for self-realization, for everyone at every level. Even if one is at a very low level, by living in that culture, if one properly tries to follow, then some purification would be there. But especially Vishnu Bhakti has to be there, otherwise no real purification is going on. It may be that one gets a bit purified, but it's not. But then one has to fall down. Sthanad prashtad padantyadaha. If one fails to charivanashrami jadi krishna nahi bhaje, what is it? Chaudhari Krishna. Swakama karite she rorave paremaje. That's the Sanskrit version of the Bhagavatam and the Bengali version of that. If one follows all the four varnas and four ashrams, but doesn't worship Krishna, then he'll fall down into hell. So purification is there, but really to sustain that and keep on going up, 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 one really has to come in contact with Vaishnavas. Especially for old people, when they go on a pilgrimage, a long pilgrimage, it's more or less, or at least half expected, that they won't come back anyway. So, because you're old, and you, old people are generally expected to die more than younger people. But to die on pilgrimage, that's very pious, even if you're not specifically in a holy place. Then a lot of the places, like I say, especially on the pilgrimage route, they're pious. They are considered holy places because Ram walked on this path. They have the whole Dandakaranya. Srila Prabhupada gave one of his disciples the name Dandakaranya. And I think, what's so holy? What's so special? Why? Why Dandakaranya? What's so holy? Rama was there? So to die on pilgrimage is glorious. Better than dying at home. To die in Vrindavan is excellent. To die remembering Krishna is best of all, wherever you are. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there for now. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpatarubhyas chakripa sindhu vyavacha patita nam pavane bhyo vaishnave bhyo.
Bhakti Vikas Swami Maharaj ki. Yeah.